Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, there to be different, just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's by audio streaming, midway 1548 in Satellite Islam. And it's a beautiful, glorious day. We've had some wonderful days for the last couple of days. The weather's warmed up brilliantly. We've had brilliant weather, bright blue skies, bright sunshine, and everyone's just raring to go out in the garden. We look around us, we find there's a burst of energy, and looking at all our, if you've been in your own gardens, looking at your neighbor's gardens, taking a drive through, you will definitely find that there's a burst of spring. If you drive past some of the informal settlements, you find beautiful buds on these trees. They're already full bloom. And we've had a little bit of rain last week and Saturday, but that definitely has helped us along. Whilst we talk of this, we are truly, truly grateful. And we'll look at other parts of the country. Still going through lots of challenges with droughts. Natal, KwaZulu-Natal having problems and challenges. We also have challenges out in Botswana. So we definitely have to use our water very sparingly. And this morning we've got a wonderful guest. She's become a household name, and she's an expert in so many areas of gardening. And not only gardening, she's taking it even further, and she's writing, and she lives in one of the most beautiful parts of the world, and that's Andrea. Hi, good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Ismail, and good morning to you at home.
Thank you very much. You know, and I was saying that you've done much more than just writing, and I want to say to you, I read an article yesterday in the newspaper. It was quite frightening, but we'll talk about it when we talk about food security and about the water and so forth. This morning, Andrea, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about trees and lawns in the first half of the program. In the second half, I want to continue our conversation with food security, because I think that is so important, especially when we see what's happening around in our environment. And it's sometimes scary to think that you could even pick up a lettuce, or you could even pick up a spinach from somewhere without knowing what water it's been contaminated with. So there's lots that we're going to be talking about. Now, Andrea, when we're talking about trees and we talk about reducing your carbon footprint through tree planting, tell us about that. You know, I think traditionally when you get into this time of the year, schools are, you know, getting ready, spring day, getting arbor day, getting things all ready to plant trees. Tell us about reducing your footprint, and what does that mean, Andrea?
Well, basically what it comes down to is that there's a lot of emissions, carbon emissions, that are caused directly or indirectly by us. We might, for example, think of our electricity usage, which is obviously fueled by coal-powered power stations, which create a lot of pollution. I don't know if you've ever driven through the Witbank area there where all the coal-fired power stations are. It's an absolute fog of pollution over there. And that is what is the problem is that when we use electricity, we're actually increasing that amount of pollution. Then, of course, we get in our cars and we drive our cars. We cause emissions through that. These are direct things that people are very aware of. When we travel overseas or so and we get in an aeroplane and fly, again, we are increasing our carbon footprint. All of this is direct. But what a lot of people are unaware of is the indirect carbon footprint that we have. So, for example, every time you buy a product and it has a lot of packaging, you know, a lot of plastic and a lot of packaging, if you buy something that's been heavily manufactured, all of these things also cause pollution. Another thing that a lot of people don't realize is imported foods. You know, we eat a lot of out-of-season fruit and vegetables, and we're going to get back to that on the food safety and food security thing that you were talking about in your introduction to the program. But one of the problems, and this is only one of the many problems associated with imported foods, is that they can have a massive, massive carbon footprint. I was recently researching an article about a food safety scare in Australia where they took foods that had actually caused major illnesses and problems. And this food had been grown in South America, grown from South America to China, processed in China and then sent to Australia. Can you only imagine the amount of pollution and carbon footprint that was caused? So there's a lot of things we can do to reduce our carbon footprint. We can live simple lives. We can look at not doing unnecessary consumption of resources. We can look at busy creating a lift club to get to work so that we don't sit in our car all on our own and create unnecessary pollution when we could be 3-4 people in a car and only one car would be creating that pollution. But one of the other things that we can do is to plant a tree, and that is a carbon sequestration is the big fancy name for that. And what it means is as a tree grows, as its biomass grows, carbon is taken out of the air during the process of photosynthesis, and that is used to create new biomass, or one could say bits of plant as it grows. So trees are a great way of carbon sequestration. Of course, additional to that is the fact that trees during their growth cycle also give off oxygen. And that means less carbon in the atmosphere and a smaller carbon footprint for you. Then again, there's also the fun side of it. You know, a lot of people think, oh, a tree, that's a really long-term thing to go and do. And, you know, how much difference can it make? And will I actually even see a tree in my lifetime? You will. I am sitting now currently on my stoop, and I'm looking out at beautiful trees that I've planted. And one of them I planted only 10 years ago, 10 years. Does that sound like a long time to you?
It's not. No, definitely not.
Very quickly. And my tree is a good 20 meters high. And it's looking great. It's a fever tree, Acacia xanthiflua, if you want the fancy name. That's that lovely acacia with the sort of a greeny gold bark that is just absolutely beautiful. And it's so fast growing. It's amazing. It's actually outside of its natural distribution area here, where I live, but it's very, very happy with the conditions it's been having. And that chap is the pride of place in my garden. And then I've got some other trees that were a little bit slower growing, and, wow, my yellowwood's 10 meters high.
10 meters already? Wow.
Yes.
Well, yes. That's fantastic.
A lot of people think that yellowwoods are slow growing. The research that was conducted by the Department of Agriculture and Forestry found that the faster growing yellowwood, which is the Ojinikwa yellowwood from my area, grows at a comparable rate to pine.
Wow. So that's quite, that's quite fast, man.
Yes, and for the forestry industry, it's a beautiful, beautiful wood, much better quality than pine.
Now, Andrew, you know, I know that the department has set out to plant a million trees in South Africa. I think that's one of the goals that we set out, and I think, I'm not too sure whether it was Millennium Goals or whether it was just other goals they set out, but a million trees. And they're going on a vigorous, you know, campaign to plant this. Tell us why it's so important to get a million trees into South Africa. And then where we're coming in, you know, I come in from the south of Johannesburg, and if you, to compare that with the north, you know, north is always famed for one of the world's, you know, sort of forest, man-made forest, whereas the south definitely has very little of that. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, the thing is really is the amount of trees that we felled when South Africa was first colonized. For example, the entire Eastern Cape area had a forest belt, and the Natal area had a forest belt all along the coastline. And I can't remember, I stand corrected, the specific history of this, but I believe it was within 40 years of settlement that almost all of that forest was chopped down to make room for sugarcane. And as you know, if you live in that area, sugarcane is not actually a very environmentally friendly crop. It has to be burned prior to harvesting, and that creates a lot of smoke and ash in the air. If you've ever lived in a sugar-growing area, you'll know that. And, of course, also the sugar industry, the processing side of it is pretty smelly, and it's not just smelly, it's also bad for the environment. And all the beautiful trees that were there once upon a time to create oxygen for the planet, for us, those were chopped down. And it's not only in this country. It's a worldwide phenomenon. Forests are being cleared to make room for agriculture. People are inclined to say, oh, agriculture, that's plants, it's good for the environment. No, agriculture is actually not that good for the environment. It's like any other industry. And it uses a lot of chemicals. It creates a lot of pollution. And obviously there are farmers out there that are doing their best to preserve some of the natural environment. But they also have an economic drive. They've got to make money out of their land. So forest clearance continues to be a problem. Bush clearance continues to be a problem. And we as South Africans, if you look at it this way, 1 million trees sounds like a lot of trees. But how many people are there in South Africa?
Well, we're on to just on to 54 million plus.
Exactly. So if one in five people plant a single tree, then, wow, we've hit the target. And you could be part of that. You could be part of meeting or exceeding that target by planting a tree this Arbor Day. And if you don't have room to plant a tree in your own garden, so a native tree, as you would say, local schools, they love to do tree planting because it's a great way of educating children about nature, about how the planet works, about the oxygen cycle, the water cycle, all of those things. It's a lovely practical example that really gets to the kids. They love it. They love those tree planting days. I've attended a few, and it's absolutely fabulous. The kids really, really get involved, and they're into it. So this is a great way also of educating the adults of the future. So you can't put a tree in your own garden. Donate a tree. Donate a tree to a local school, and they'll be very, very thankful, and you'll know that you've done something great for the planet.
Yes, thank you very much for that. Now, when we talk about trees and wanting to plant trees, before we go on to any of the others, every year South Africa, the Department of Forestry goes out and identifies a tree that would be the tree of the year. And tell us about that particular tree. And then any other tree or the thing that we should consider. Now, we know we've had a great problem with the wattles and so forth. Tell us about the tree of the year and other trees that we should be considering.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's first of all begin with the invasive trees. They are a problem. We might say, yes, a tree is good for the environment, but the tree has to belong in that environment in order to be good for it. Otherwise, it can actually, on the contrary, be bad for that environment. The problem with invasive trees that we have in South Africa is that many of them are thirsty species. They're trees that drink a lot of water out of the ground, and we are a water-poor country. We have to conserve our water resources, and it's absolutely incredible. I don't have the figures in front of me, but a single invasive eucalypt or something like that can use literally hundreds of liters of water a day, and then plus it makes seeds which germinate very easily, and very soon our entire water cycle is disrupted. We have rivers drying up, and that affects people downstream. So obviously we always recommend, as trees of the year, we always recommend an indigenous tree. But please bear in mind, the tree of the year is not the only tree that you can plant, because obviously they have to choose one or two trees. Usually they choose two trees, a common tree and a rarer tree, that they would like people to be aware of and potentially plant. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that specific tree is going to be good in your environment. It might not even like it. So, for example, I see here we have Combretum krausii, the forest bush willow, as tree of the year. And to the best of my knowledge, and I'm just going to double check, but as far as I know, this guy, yes, mild to warm climate, it does not like cold. I've tried to grow them even here in the Southern Cape, where we don't get any frost. And it didn't like our winters. It said the winters were too cold. I was keeping them out of the wet because they're a summer rainfall plant, didn't like that very, very much. However, it does occur from the coast to the Midlands in the eastern regions of South Africa, and also, of course, in the Swaziland area. And it grows quite well from sea level to about 1,200 meters above sea level. So in other words, relatively coastal zone plant, mild climate to warm climate. Those of you that are in the Eastern Cape and Natal, excellent choice. The Combretum krausii, or forest bush willow, very pretty tree. One of the prettiest things about it is its seeds, which are these sort of pinkish winged capsules, and that was actually what made me want to grow this plant, even though I'm over here in the Southern Cape and it's a bit out of its distribution. Didn't like it. So if you're living in those areas, by all means, go for that specific tree of the year. Then we also have the rarer tree, which is Heteromorpha arborescens. Terrible name. So remember the English name.
Well, I wouldn't even say it's a tongue twister. I wouldn't even try repeating it after you.
Yes, I'm reasonably sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I could also be wrong. In any case, it's also known as the parsley tree, which makes it a little bit easier to remember. Quite an attractive small to medium-sized deciduous tree, great for low-maintenance gardening.
So it's a deciduous tree.
It's a deciduous tree. And once again, it's a little bit more frost-tolerant than the other one. It does occur in the Eastern Cape. It does occur in the Free State, but in the eastern part of the Free State. And, of course, in KZN, Swaziland, and into Gauteng. So this tree is more frost-tolerant. If you're living in one of the colder areas of the country, please don't plant Combretum krausii. You will be disappointed. Rather look out for Heteromorpha arborescens. But a parsley tree.
I definitely would. I'm not even going to try and repeat it. I'm not going to say. I'll just say, look, forget about the tree. It doesn't exist.
Yes, these Latin names are fascinating. Of course, the big advantage of them is that it does make it a very specific thing. So, for example, you might have two or three trees that somebody's decided to call a parsley tree, whereas with that Latin first name and last name, you can be very certain we're all talking about the same thing. But if you're living in a specific area, the best tree to plant is a tree that naturally occurs in your area, because that means that your tree will thrive. It will become independent of your extra care quite quickly once you've planted it and it's settled down into the ground. So look around you. The trees that are around you are the best trees to plant, the ones that occur naturally. When you drive out of town and you see trees by the side of the road, Those are actually the trees that you should be looking at. And do bear in mind that they're not necessarily going to look the same way in your garden, because you have a lot of control over how your tree grows. You can say to it, I want you to be straight up, up to a certain height so that people can walk under you. You can say to it, I want you to grow over there in that specific place. You can look after it so that it grows at its optimum rate. You can give it, especially while it's young, a little bit of extra fertilizer to get it going a little bit faster. And you'll treat this generally more love, and it does a little bit better, and it gets you a better end result than a tree that comes from another area. That said, it's a generalization. As I was saying at the beginning of the program, here I am sitting looking at my cedar tree, which doesn't belong at all in my area, but it's still a good tree. It's still drought tolerant. It's still hardy enough to tolerate the conditions here. It's grown fantastically well. So you can also look at what your neighbors have got in their gardens and see, oh yes, oh, that tree is doing so well. It's looking beautiful in somebody's garden. And nowadays with cell phones and so on, it's easy to just quickly sneak a picture and take that into your local certified garden center, Life is a Garden garden center, or any garden center. Pop in there and show them a photo of the tree, or if it's a friend of yours's garden, ask for a PC of the tree and say, what is this tree? This is what I want to plant in my garden. And a good proactive garden center, if they haven't got stock, they will get it in especially for you. And we've got the whole month of September. It used to be we just had Arbor Day. Then it sort of extended into Arbor Week, and now I see people are calling it Arbor Month. So you've got all months. You can choose your special day for planting your tree, donating your tree, or whatever it is that you're going to do with your tree. Hopefully it ends up in the ground.
Well, Mohammed says don't plant yourself.
Sorry?
Mohammed said don't plant yourself. I said we're definitely not going to plant ourselves. We're just planting trees. Now, MJ, just a couple of quick ones. You know, we seem to be running because we've on this first segment of the program. Now, I think, you know, you've mentioned something, I've never heard that before. Planting trees with pioneer plant companions for faster growth. What's that? Tell me something about that.
Well, in nature, what happens, and I'm sure you've seen, if you've got an open area of ground, the first thing that happens is that certain plants come up in that. Some of them will be weeds, or what we call weeds, which would be plants that we usually find in our flower beds and we don't like. Mm. Some of them are indigenous, some of them exotic. But then after that, these plants, these beginner plants, if they're the indigenous ones, obviously, enrich the soil, and they enable other plants to come up. Now, a pioneer plant would be, for example, the keurboom. I don't know if you know the keurboom. It is also known as, I'll think of the English name now, but this guy is a fast grower. It's got a pretty flower. Blossom tree is the English name. It's got a purple flower, very, very pretty, very, very fast growing. Unfortunately, short-lived. But these pioneer plants, such as the keurboom, another example would be the bitto, which grows here along the Eastern Cape Coast, Southern Cape, Western Cape Coast. These plants, again, create a more protected environment, which allows what they call the climax vegetation, which is the absolute top-level vegetation that can occur in an area. It allows them to grow. It creates the right environment for them. So if you, for example, plant a yellowwood tree and you plant a bitto nearby, what actually happens is that you get faster growth from your climax tree, which is your yellowwood tree, because this other tree will initially grow much quicker and almost seem to overshadow it, but it's actually creating the right environment for this tree to go, yes, I've got legs, I'm in the right area, I can grow now. So I hope that answers your question, because I see you're running up to news time.
Yes, just one fine question that's come through. I'm wanting to plant a tree, but I've got another tree in there. I think I've got the... I'm trying to look what the person has written. I beg your pardon, you know, he's got something in there wanting to remove that particular plant and plant a tree. What guidelines do you have?
Yes, oh, that's the whole subject on its own. Depends on the plant that's in the way. If that plant is a tree and you want to plant something right there where it stood.
No, they're wanting to remove it, from what I understand. They're wanting to remove that particular plant and then plant the tree in there. What precautions should they be taking?
Depends on the plant that was there before. As I say, if it was another tree, you're going to have to do some root removal and some stump removal. It's a big job, but you can do it. But obviously, you can't just leave it a whole bunch of roots and then plant something on top of that and expect your plant to grow as well. At least in the area around it, you need to clear away the old roots. If it was something like a pine tree that has acidified the soil, you need to do something about that. My favorite way of doing that is always just to dig through a lot of compost, and then you can use some lime to take out the acidity in the soil. It really depends on the plant you're taking out.
What we're going to do, Andrea, is when they come back from news, I'll try and get more information for that. I see we're running into news time. When they come back, I'll try and find out from the listener what particular tree that was. Okay.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
Have a great one.
Yeah.
See you now. Bye-bye.
Did you know that gardening is the fastest growing hobby in the world? Islam highly recommends planting trees and urges people to protect them to the extent that planting a tree is considered as an act of worship for which special prayer is recommended. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Unless you are compelled, do not cut down a tree." So join Ismail Pariyava every Sunday between 8:30 and 9:30 a.m. on the program Dare to Be Different.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, Dare to Be Different. My name is Ismail Pariyava. Just wonderful to have you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, Medium Wave 1548 in Satellite Islam. And from our part of the world, beautiful sunshine, blue skies, brilliant weather, and we are truly blessed. And we've got a wonderful guest this morning with us, and that's Andrea. She's in one of the most beautiful parts of the country, and that's out in the southern part of the Cape. And Mohammed always laughs because I think he wants to know, when are we ever going to get there? Andrea, is there a possibility of cutting out into that part of the world?
If why don't you come down here? I think you'll love it.
Well, when a moment saying, well, we're getting, and he says to me this morning, it's cold there. Is it very cold, Andrea?
Not that cold, no. Fortunately, there's no wind. We have had quite a lot of rain. In fact, we are still expecting some rain today, but it's all in all been a bit less rainy than I thought because it all blew out, you see. It's absolutely gorgeous here. All the birds are coming back. As you know, I live in the middle of a wilderness national park. And I really knew it was spring about 2 weeks ago when I saw all the swallows come flying in their flocks. Absolutely beautiful. I saw two eagles in a courtship flight. It was absolutely beautiful. You really know it's spring when you see these things happening around you.
Just let's go back to the question. Thank you very much for that. Andrea, the plant was the cycads, okay? So it was, they've got four cycads and want to plant four trees. Now, cycads is not very deep rooted, so I don't think there'd be a big challenge. Would that be?
Well, it just depends on the cycad. If they're looking at cycads revoluta, they can go mad, they can kill it. If they want to, it's no problem. But if it is one of the indigenous cycads...
No, it's not an indigenous. It's definitely not the indigenous one.
It's the exotic one.
Yeah.
Those actually transplant quite well as well. So mm-hmm. They could even look at moving that. And I would actually even phone up a few local landscaping companies if they don't want it and say, okay, I've got some cycads I want to get rid of. You can have them if you take them out.
You know, I think they're wanting
not
to look
at... way.
Well, I'm not too sure. I don't know. They just said they're wanting... But from what I've seen, it's not very large. It may just be just under a meter, so it's a very big ones.
Yes, yes. Well, in that case, they're really quite easy to get out. They don't do anything nasty to the soil. If they want to move them, I would say try and keep a fair amount of root volume there so that your plant doesn't go into too much shock if you're just moving it. Otherwise, in any case, you do want to get most of the root volume out so that you've got a nice soil again, and you want to enrich the soil with some compost. You want to dig through around about one spade for every three spades of soil, and there you go. Your soil's prepared, and you can pop in your trees.
Thank you very much for that. Now, we've got so much to talk about trees, but I'm not too sure. I think we said we're going to talk about food security. Maybe just one last one on trees before we go on to the food security aspect. Now, how to care for a tree? I think that's important. We've planted a tree. We decide what tree we want. What would you say is, you know, important, and how could we care for the tree?
Well, first of all, you have to remember that every plant that you plant, it's a new plant. It's got a limited root volume. So even though that plant might be drought tolerant once it's settled in, during that early phase just after the planting, water is very, very important. You don't want to overdo it, but you do want to give it some extra water to ensure that that root volume is not drying out. Best way to do that is actually just scratch around in the soil a little bit and see how it is. I normally water new trees round about once a week. If it's very hot, maybe twice a week, just for the first 3 months or so. And then from there on, I reduce the watering gradually. I'll go down, if I was doing twice a week, I go down to once a week. And then later on, just when it starts getting a bit dry. Normally around about 3 to 6 months is enough to get a tree almost ready to be independent of your help. Then, of course, also there's fertilizer. And with a big tree, that doesn't really make a lot of difference. But when you've just planted your tree, you add a little bit of extra nutrition to the soil, by using an organic or chemical fertilizer, then you can really boost the growth and get much, much better growth out of it. During summer, I would usually suggest that you feed every 6 to 8 weeks just to get the absolute, absolute best growth out of it. You want to get gratification. You want to see your tree growing. So that's important. Another important thing to do is to monitor your branch structure. Now, the way a tree grows is it has one dominant shoot or two. But if you have two dominant shoots, realize you're going to get a multi-trunk tree. Multi-trunk trees can get problematic later on in terms of their structural stability, especially if you're in a very windy area or something of that nature. So, yes, look at your branching structure. The shoot that has the highest tip is dominant. That guy is suppressing all the shoots beneath it, and it is growing. Is that the shoot that you want to be the trunk of the tree when the tree is mature? Normally when you buy a tree, if it's a young tree, you'll get what they call in the trade a whip, which is basically a straight stick with one leader, which is your top point branch, and then some side branches. You don't want to cut off all the side branches, because obviously the side branches are also nourishing the tree. They're also photosynthesizing. But what you don't want is you don't want your side branches now overtaking your leader shoot, because otherwise you're going to get a funny, kinky shape in your tree. And you might not want that. Or you might end up with a multi-stem tree with weak branch unions, which makes it susceptible to maybe dropping a branch later on in life. So while the tree is still young, it's important to maintain your leader. Select your leader, maintain it. Make sure that it continues to be the highest point on that tree. If one of the side branches starts growing to the point where it's actually overtaking the leader, you need to remove that, or else be aware that you might be getting a new leader and a bend in your stem of your tree when it matures. Another thing to look out for is any branch that crosses another branch. Obviously, that's a bad idea, because as these branches expand, they start rubbing against each other, they start constricting each other. Again, it's a recipe for trouble later on in your tree's life. Think about the branches that you're going to keep and the branches that you're going to retain. Usually with a whip, you let the single leader remain the boss until the whole whip is taller than a person. Because you want people to be able to walk around under your tree. You don't want to have people backing and diving underneath the tree. So you keep that primary leader until it's above your head height, until it's the point where you want the tree to now start forming a canopy. Now at this point, you break the rules. Now you say, okay, I've got my main trunk. It might just look like a long thin thing at the moment, but that is going to be the main trunk of the tree, and now I want it to start developing crown. And at that point, you can start trimming, and you can start selecting the branches that you want to form the crown of the tree. Here again, as your tree grows, check it every now and then. Twice a year is enough, really. If it's growing really fast, maybe three times a year. But just go and have a look at the branches and think it through. What's that branch going to do when it gets bigger? If it's growing inwards into the center of the crown, it's a bad branch. Take it off. If it crosses over, it's a bad branch. Take it off. And then allow the strong branches that are going to form the canopy of your tree to grow and develop. If you want to see more branching, you want to get a slightly denser crown, you can trim off those tips and encourage the branches to branch out even more. But always bear in mind that one day this is going to be a big tree. And what you're doing now is you're building that basic structure that's ultimately going to be the shape of your tree. It's really fun, actually, and it's quite interesting meditation to stand there looking at this tree. And what are you going to do?
Well, thank you very much for that, and we're going to drop the tree subject now, but we're definitely going to come back to it. You know, there's so much that we can still talk about trees, India. And now the second part that I spoke about was we're going to talk about food security. It's that time of the year people are planning and wanting to have a food garden, looking at the trends coming out, seeing what's happening, and also some of the scary articles. Yesterday was an article in the local newspaper where they said that, the amount of polluted water, and you know, when you buy your lettuces and radishes and things like this, mm-hmm. the waters that they use would sometimes lead to semolinas, you know, so those type of illnesses come through. Now, I'm not sure, you know, but when I looked at it, it was scary enough for us to talk and, you know, use it as a base of our topic for this morning. And then last week there's an article around about Roundup, you know, that is the chemical that they've been using you know, on a large scale, when you're doing large scale farming. So for those two particular articles, I thought, well, it was important that we talk about food security. Why is it important to plant your own food? Why is it important for you to get even just your lettuce, your salad greens? If you can't get everything else, at least get that fresh and your herbs. Talk about some of those.
Well, really, if you grow your own plants, you know everything that has happened to them. If you buy them off the supermarket shelves, you just have to hope and trust that these plants have been grown and harvested and transported and stored in the way that that at least makes sure that they're not dangerous. Usually the packing stores will make an effort to disinfect fruits and vegetables. But there have been several food safety scares, even in countries where they're extremely strict, much stricter than we are, where contaminated water, for example, has caused particularly stomach problems through bacteria. And then, of course, there's also the issue of pesticides. There are specific withholding periods that farmers are supposed to observe in order to pick the fruits or the vegetables or whatever so that the residues, the chemical residues, are not dangerous. Please note, not dangerous. That doesn't mean to say they aren't there. It just means they're not dangerous. And if you're a farmer, let's just imagine, you've got your livelihood tacked to a field of, let's say, tomatoes, and you discover that there's a problem with my tomatoes, and I have to harvest tomorrow. What are you going to do? The temptation is extremely great to spray, harvest before the withholding period is over, and just sell that fruit with the pesticide right on it. Because otherwise the farmer stands to lose the whole crop. Obviously, there are ethical farmers. There are people that will do everything in their power to ensure that the food they grow is safe. But there are temptations out there for people that are, you know, they're desperate. And you could end up with food that is contaminated with pesticide residues. You were also talking about Roundup. And this is one of the big controversies with this whole GMO, genetically modified organisms thing, that it's very, very controversial. To be honest with you, I see both sides of the argument. But there are some things that I don't agree with that they're doing with GMOs. GMOs could be, for example, just disease resistant. That means that they don't need spraying because they don't get sick. To me, that's positive. That is something that is good for the environment. It's good for farm workers. It's good for the consumer who ultimately eats that thing. There are GMOs that, for example, promote in rice a vitamin A precursor. And now in the Far East, where rice is a staple food, vitamin A deficiency is a major problem in the population. Everybody lives off rice. If they could get vitamin A out of their rice, then we will have less deficiency diseases, healthier people. To me, this makes sense. This is great. But the one that I do find I personally have a problem with, and that is what they call Roundup Ready, which a lot of crops, especially grain crops, are being grown as Roundup Ready. Now, what that means is that genes have been introduced into the plants that make them resistant to herbicides. Now, Roundup is a non-selective herbicide. So, in other words, you spray it on plants, they will die. All of them will die. That is just the way it is. But certain plants are Roundup resistant. You'll spray the Roundup and you'll see it's done absolutely nothing to the plant. It's still growing. Usually these plants are in the minimum. They are a minority of plants. But now they're starting to breed grain crops that are Roundup ready. What does this mean? This means that farmers can control the weeds in their crop rows by spraying Roundup right over the crop. The crop won't die, but the weeds will die. Now, the reason why they do this is to increase their yield, because the more weeds you have in a field, the more competition you have in the soil. A soil can only produce so much biomass, or shall we say plant material. So now, if you breed the crop to be Roundup ready, you can spray, kill the weeds, and get an increased harvest at the end of the day. And this is highly, highly controversial. There are people that are linking it to autism. There are people who are linking it to a number of different health scares. I don't know to what degree, but I do know that one thing that is definitely known about Roundup is that it is carcinogenic. It can cause cancer. So I'm not on the inside of this. I don't know all the rules and regulations and ins and outs, but I find it scary. I find it scary that crops that we eat that form the basic staples of our diets are being sprayed with this Roundup. The other thing, of course, that I find scary about it is if these plants are not supposed to be fertile, they're not supposed to actually make second-generation seeds that can grow. But if somebody has made a mistake, we might just end up with a wonderful mega-weed that just takes over the whole planet. That scares me a little bit as well. So that's the whole thing about growing your plants at home. If you grow them at home, you know what's happened to that plant. You know it hasn't been sprayed with Roundup because you're the person who's in charge. You know if you use pesticides, when they were applied, and you know the risks because hopefully you read the pamphlet that is inside that pesticide, or perhaps you decided to go organic, which I highly recommend, you will get a lower yield. It is inevitable that you'll get a lower yield, but at least you know your food is absolutely residue-free. It's completely natural. You get better flavor because you can harvest your things when they're ripe, whereas a lot of crops are picked when they're green and then shipped to market under cold storage and so on. They lose flavor then because they're not getting the sunshine while they're ripened. They're not creating those sugars that give a delicious, delicious flavor to your food. Another advantage, of course, apart from knowing where it's come from, having that healthfulness, having the psychological advantage of knowing, this comes out of my own garden. That is also so rewarding to be able to put a meal on the table and be able to say, well, half the produce that we're eating today has been grown in my own garden. I know what was used on these plants. I did it myself. The other advantage, of course, is that whole problem that we mentioned earlier of imported foods that travel all over the world. And if there is then nature of food safety scare, it can be really difficult to track where this actually came from. And then in addition, you discover these things have traveled thousands of miles. I mean, you can think what that's also doing for the nutrition as the time takes taken after harvest until it reaches your table increases, the nutrients in the food start breaking down. Plus as well, then, of course, there's the whole air pollution side of things. Even if plants are trucked in from a farm a few hundred kilometers away, they've still been trucked in. So everything that you grow in your own garden has so many benefits to you, to the environment, to your family, to your health. It's just, it's one of the best activities that you can do. So I really, really recommend growing your own food as much as possible. It's a wonderful experience, so great when you see those little seeds coming up. Even better when you start harvesting and putting those gorgeous ripe beetroots out of the ground, picking your radishes for your salads, busy getting your lettuce in. Time now is for butter lettuces, not head lettuces. Please, it's too hot for head lettuce. So go for your butter lettuces, the ones with the open leaves. Go and harvest those leaves in your own garden. Grow a few things to spice up your salads, like chives. Chives are wonderful, chopped into salads. Spring onions. All this wonderful bounty. You can actually end up with much more variety and much better food than what you would be able to get in the supermarket.
Thank you very much for that. And, you know, the other thing that I was reading about was the, you know, imported foods. Whilst, you know, besides the carbon emission, you know, certain foods come out at certain times of the year. For example, we have lots of citrus in winter in South Africa. So now you bring in, and could you imagine now eating watermelons, you know, in the cold season? It just doesn't seem right for the body. So those are things that we've got to remember that, you know, that fruits from a certain particular area come in at that time because it's there to nourish your body and it's there to enhance. And that, is that correct, Andrea?
You are so right. You are so right. It's not only healthful, it's flavorful. The world's top chefs, I'm talking about these guys with the Michelin awards and so on, they use fresh produce in season. And when they say fresh, they mean harvested locally and straight from the field, basically through the kitchen to the table. That is the best way to eat food. It's the most nourishing way to eat food, and it's also the tastiest, most delicious way to eat food. The nature works in a certain way for a reason. I mean, if you look at it, oranges are ripe for us in winter. I mean, wow, that's just the time we really need vitamin C.
Definitely need them all the time, double dose.
Watermelons in summer, that's when we need that refreshment, we need that extra hydration. And watermelon is one of the foods that actually hydrates you better than drinking water in a glass, because it actually it's balanced, it's isotonic, it absorbs very, very easily into your system. Summer is just the time when we get dehydrated. And by the way, figures say that most of us spend our lives dehydrated. So please do drink more water, and definitely in summer, pile into those watermelons. Great way to get yourself freshened up on a hot day.
Now, Andreas, unfortunately, we cannot continue with this conversation. I've got a couple of questions that come. Let's try and see if we can do one or two of these questions. It says, how can I remove or kill off an avocado stump? The new growth keeps appearing. It's 35 millimeters in diameter.
Okay, you need to kill off a tree stump. There is something that you can get for that that will actually do it. What I would do before I do the treatment is I would pull off all the water sprouts that are coming out from the roots, try and dig down to the roots where they are coming out, cut them off there so that they don't resprout, get all the leaves off of it, and then go to your main stump. You will need a drill. You will need a product called Garlon, G-A-R-L-O-N, Garlon. And this is used quite widely. You know, when you take out alien plants and so on, a lot of them are re-sprouted. So especially now thinking of guys in Gauteng, the syringa is a major problem there. But if you chop down a syringa, what it does is it coppices, which is to say that it shoots out from the roots.
Definitely does. Ask me about that. It keeps on coming back.
Exactly. So that's when you do need that little chemical intervention. Garlon is relatively safe because you don't spray it on, and it only remains localized within that tree stump. So I do recommend it. Forestry also uses that product. You drill some holes in the top of the stump, and you'll find instructions on the bottle. You normally mix it with diesel, and then you pour this Garlon mixed with diesel into the holes in the stump, and it goes down into the roots, and it kills off the roots. That's basically the best and only way to get rid of some invader plants and also this unwanted avocado tree. Shame. I wish I had an avocado tree.
Yes, lovely avocados, that one. You didn't have to worry about footprint. Okay, Andrea, the next one is, it advised to plant a white, and I hope I've got these, Zendeschias at the foot of the Silesia Nicolai.
Okay, oh, this is a scientific garden. Gardener. Okay, so let me just get this straight. He's got Zendeschias, which is arum lilies to use, and he's got Silesia Nicolai, that's that lovely, what they call also the wild banana, with the white and blue crane flower. What is his problem with these two things?
Is it advisable to plant the white arum lilies at the foot of the, well, you know, like you said, at the foot of the Silesia?
I think it'll look gorgeous. Remember, the white arum lilies do like a fairly wet soil. So do look into that. This tulipa doesn't mind being relatively wet. But normally when I grow my white arum lilies, or Zendeschias, as our scientific gardener said, I like to look for the wettest place in my garden. That is not necessarily a shady place, although they do tolerate shade. It can be in full sun. But they love wet seeps. If you look at where they grow in nature, they grow along ditches that are drainage ditches, and oh, it's absolutely beautiful at this time of the year. The drainage ditches are just full of these beautiful white flowers, and they're just absolutely at their best when they get lots and lots of water. So for a householder, those areas would quite often be where your gutters come out. If you have a water feature where the overflow for your water feature is, I saw some gorgeous ones in a park in Pretoria that basically they just let the pond have a natural overflow into a bed of Zendeschias. The biggest, best flowers I've ever seen. Absolutely gorgeous. So that's the only main thing I would like to say about that is Zendeschias prefer a wetter spot in your garden. Your Silesia won't mind one way or the other. It's usually pretty okay with wet conditions, pretty okay with dry conditions. Very tolerant plant. But your arums are the question really there is the environment right for the arums? If it's a very hot, dry, sunny spot, probably not good for your arums. You can go for a sunny spot, but then the soil needs to be regularly moist. That is the beauty of the Zendeschias, really, because we all have wet and dry spots in our garden.
Well, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, Andrea. We've got to chat to you. There's lots more that we can talk about. I know the tree subject hasn't come to an end. With food, we've just touched it, but I think we're going to be sharing lots more information. You take care. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Enjoy that beautiful part of the world. And I hope you see one of those elusive, nicer elephants. That's all for me. Take care.
Super. Thank you too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And that was Andrea talking to us about what's to be done in part of the garden this time with food security as well as trees. And that's all for me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't forget that Radio Islam's AGM is to be taking place in the next couple of minutes. So if you are in the area, it's at Masjid Salihin, extension 13, to join us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.